Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hi, this is Ro, host of the Queen Pod. We are on a mission to offer you a companion piece to the entire Queen back catalogue, track by track, and Queen are letting us play all their music. To find out about how to support us and access some Bijou exclusives, pop along to patreon.com/QueenPod. So, without further ado, let's see where the wind blows.
Is this the real life? Is this just fantasy? Caught in a landslide, no escape from reality. Open your eyes, look up to the skies and see. I'm just a poor boy, I need no sympathy. Because I'm easy come, easy go, little high, little law. Any way the wind blows doesn't really matter to me.
Oh, there it is. Welcome to Queen Pod. Yes, we're here. Play Queen loud. We are looking at Queen Greatest Hits 1, and it's a playlist the band curated for us, so you should totally add it to your playlist. Why wouldn't you? But before we get into it all, I am your host, Ro, and I'm here with comedian Suze Kempner.
Hi.
Queen documentarian Simon Lupton.
Hello.
Comedian and podcaster John Robbins.
Hello there.
Hello. And I introduced myself at the beginning of that sentence, didn't I? So we're good. All right. So this album, this wonderful album, Greatest Hits, kicks off with a song by one Freddie Mercury, 5 minutes 55 seconds long, isn't it? For it is Bohemian Rhapsody from A Night at the Opera, the single originally released on October the 31st, 1975. What do you think, guys? Opening Greatest Hits with Bohemian Rhapsody? Where do we stand on that?
Well, superb.
Set the benchmark high, why don't you?
John?
I wonder if there was a discussion, because the next track is Another One Bites the Dust, and those are their two biggest singles.
Yeah.
So I wonder whether they thought, let's just grab them by the jaffers and not let them go.
Yeah.
They did. And I bet they used those words.
Yes. It was the early 80s. But I think you're absolutely right. Running Order plays a huge, huge part in this. And, you know, do you know what I'm mindful of is that they unexpectedly opened their Live Aid set with Bohemian Rhapsody. You expect them to open with a big stomper, and of course, Bohemian Rhapsody is just a huge kid. But it does work as the opening to an album and as an opening to a set. It's incredible that it does do that. You sort of think of it as a bit of a finale song more than, I think.
Well, I think that's the confidence you get from having so many good songs, because any other band would put their big hit front and centre and just sort of hope people bought the album off the strength of that. And by the time you get to sort of five or six, you're thinking, oh, yeah, I sort of remember that one. But they've got so much that they can afford to put their biggest hit right at the front without feeling people are going to lose interest throughout the rest of the album.
Imagine being someone who's not really come across Queen before, and someone goes, this is the best-selling album of all time in this country, here it is, and they go, ooh, and they put it on, and the first song they hear is Bohemian Rhapsody. That would be a mind-blower, wouldn't it?
Yeah.
Well, I did have the rare honour of being able to play a grown adult Bohemian Rhapsody for the first time in their lives.
Really?
Wow.
Yeah, Where did you find this grown adult?
I was getting a cab to Gatwick at 4 a.m. And the driver, this was about 5 years ago, the driver said he would have been in his 30s.
Okay.
And the driver said, oh, is there any specific music you want? And I said, oh, Queen. And he said, oh, I've never heard of Queen. And I was like, what? Are you insane? I was like, you must have heard of Bohemian Rhapsody. And he said, what? And I said, put Bohemian Rhapsody on Spotify on your, because he had like, he could run it all through. I said, you've heard this, right? He's like, no, I've never heard this before. And I think he was Eastern European, which made it even more insane because Queen was so big over there. And so he listened to Bohemian Rhapsody for the first time in his life with me sat there. After it finished, I said, so what do you think of that? He said it sounded like classical music, which I thought was amazing.
Wow.
Because that's amazing.
It is,
that's
it
an
is,
extraordinary
it,
story.
It does feel like a genre in itself.
Mm.
Like you've got rock, pop, jazz, folk, rap, R&B, and Bohemian Rhapsody.
What I will say to you new listeners that are joining us for this this pod, you can go to season 2, episode 2, where we look at the second side B of Night of the Opera, and we talk in some detail on Bohemian Rhapsody there as well. So we warmly encourage you to do that. But what I can tell you is that Bohemian Rhapsody topped the UK singles charts for 9 weeks. 9 weeks! Its final week at number one, before it was replaced by Mamma Mia by those pesky ABBAs.
Tell them the fun fact.
You gotta do the fun fact.
Yeah!
It's that Bohemian Rhapsody is the only song to be replaced at number one by a song that has a lyric from that song in the title of the other song.
That's a fun fact. Why is that not immediately in my head? Well done, all three of you. You all get house points. That's so good. Simon, have you got some nice old history to share with us on Bohemian Rhapsody and its placement on this album?
In the quickest possible time, I'd just like to say that I think there's one thing that's more impressive than Bohemian Rhapsody itself, and that is the context in which they recorded and released it. Because at the time, the band were massively in debt. Their management contract up until that point meant they didn't earn very much from their first three albums. They were on a salary rather than royalty. They'd bought themselves out of that deal at great expense. And for an album to succeed in those days, you needed to go on tour. That's how it would work. You'd release the album and then you'd go on tour to promote it. And that was massively expensive. There were no big sponsorship deals in those days. A Night at the Opera had turned out to be the most expensive album to date when they'd recorded it, which would need to be paid for out of its subsequent sales. So if this album had failed, the question is, would the record company have stumped up for another album? And even if they did, or were contractually obliged to, would the band have had enough money generated to clear their previous touring debts? And if they couldn't, then the lighting, stage and sound suppliers would be unlikely to hire them gear for their next tour, meaning you wouldn't be able to promote your next album. So it would become a vicious circle. And almost certainly that would have meant the end of Queen. So against that backdrop and those stakes, and with the need to have a great single release to get the fans excited for the new album and tour, Queen decided to release Bohemian Rhapsody, despite everyone telling them it wouldn't get radio play, so probably would sink without trace. And that, ladies and gentlemen, is how Queen roll.
Wow. We've got a new producer with us for this mini-series, by the way. We've got producer Emily Wiley now, Fergus March, Giles Henderson. Producer Giles hasn't gone far, but she is here now. Hello, Emily. You have to unmute now and say and use your voice and your words.
Hello.
Hey.
So that's Wiley, everyone. But Wiley there just played a beautiful bit at the top. And that bit is, so that bit for me was always kind of that little a cappella bit. It's that quiet moment where you're almost giving yourself a pep talk before you first have to go and do one of these terrible confrontations that you periodically have to do in your life. You know, I've just got to get through it. It's going to be bad, but on the other side of it, I'm still a guy, you know what I mean? Does that resonate for you guys? Is that a thing that makes sense to you?
I think it's a song about identity and whether that's sort of sexual identity or your religion or your race or where you fit in society or who you think you are. And I think that's perhaps why it remains quite mysterious, is because that question is very mysterious and it's not necessarily something you consciously think of. You don't sit down and think, right, who am I? It's something we all question at various points throughout our lives, which is why I think Bohemian Rhapsody is a song that spans generations. It's not just a teenage song, though it certainly has messages for teenagers. It's not just a song for older people, though it absolutely has messages for people in older age. And so by being so unspecific, it has resonances with everyone who listens to it.
I think that's right. It is. You're right. It's mysterious, but completely resonant. It's an extraordinary song. Absolutely extraordinary. Let's get along to a guitar solo that I think's recently been acknowledged as one of the greatest in all rock history. Shall we listen to that, Wiley, please? Talk to me about this beautiful guitar solo.
Well, I think the song shows such enormous range of Brian's guitar sound, from the headbanging section, you know, that everyone knows from Wayne's World, through that solo, right up to those incredibly sort of fragile, quite tender notes at the end, with those sort of very slight bends. And when that taxi driver said it sounds like classical music, I think a big part of that is how Brian is able to sound like a part of an orchestra. It's like he sort of steps out from a sort of 60-piece orchestra as an instrument and then sort of recedes back again and allows other instruments to take over.
Mm.
It's quite hard to get your head around all of the orchestration in Bohemian Rhapsody.
Well, we're already running short of time. This is ridiculous. But what I'd love to do, Suze, is talk to you about the opera section, really. I'm going to use the a cappella version.
Okay,
it's on the deluxe version of Night at the Opera, which is cool. Scaramouche, will you do the fandango? Thunderbolt and lightning, very, very frightening me. Galileo!
I'm just a poor boy, nobody loves me.
He's just a poor boy from a poor family. Spare him his life from this monstrosity.
Easy come, easy go, will you let me go?
Bismillah!
No, we will not let you go.
Let him go!
Bismillah!
We will not let you go.
Let him go!
Bismillah!
We will not let you go.
Let me go!
We will not let you go.
Let me go!
Never let you go.
Never let me go!
Mamma mia, mamma mia.
Mamma mia, let me go. Beelzebub has a devil put aside for me. For me. For me.
Blimey. How do you do an opera choir in the middle of a rock song, Suze?
Just like that. It's so brilliant that their three voices, Brian, Roger and Freddie, their three voices are completely different. They all cover different bits of the scale. They've all got different colours, yet they always blended together so well. And at this point, they've been working together for 5 years, 4 or 5 years. And you can hear that they know. It's not just that they've gone, right, we're going to take the risk and do this song now. They know what each other does so well that they've gone, I think I know where each voice can fit in this massively multi-tracked operatic section of a rock song. So he knew that right on the top, they didn't need to bring in a session singer soprano. They just put Roger singing that top line on everything, which gives it a whole different sound. Because if this was Pink Floyd, they'd have brought in session singers and it would sound epic. But because it's Queen, because it was just these three voices, it has the incredible distinct sound you get with Queen, because it was such a distinct way of harmonising and the sounds of their voices together were so distinct.
That's beautiful. Amazing. Simon, what have you got to say? Because normally you're guaranteed to blow our minds, aren't you?
Guaranteed to blow your mind.
I do like to blow your minds every now and again if I possibly can. Yeah.
Yeah.
So I'm not going to say anything. I'm going to leave it in the hands of someone else. This is something that I've sneakily lifted out of an excellent documentary that has a bit of John Deacon chatting about how the song was constructed. But more specifically, there's some wonderful clips from the band in the studio.
Do too slow.
No, that's nice, that's nice. I tell you, that is slower on there.
It was a very strange song to record, in a way, because we actually did it in sections.
I like that first bit. So I'll come in from here now. Carry on.
Oh, yeah, I remember doing one recording session in Rockfield. And he was saying, right, these are the notes, and it goes dum, 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 and it seemed to have no connection with anything.
One.
But he had all the ideas of what he wanted to go on top.
Did you hear that? Pum chum fish. Oh, it's too much. There was three of us, and we all came in a beat later.
No, you didn't shout one or anything. You...
I know, I shouted one and came in myself late. It's so hot in here, I'm not kidding.
Oh, love it. What I wouldn't give to be in those sessions and fly on the wall. Oh, they sound like they're having so much fun. That was amazing.
Oh, brilliant.
One of the things that's occurred to us is that there are people listening to this that may only have the Queen Greatest Hits albums. And if you then find yourself at a Queen gig or whatever, but you want to pass yourself off as a legit Queen fan, I've got a little blaggers tip for you of what you can say to sound like you're a deep cut Queen fan. So my one for Bohemian Rhapsody is this, which is Bohemian Rhapsody is obviously a masterpiece, but personally Prophet Song just edges it for me. You could just say that.
It's a good opinion.
And everyone will just believe. You don't need to know what it means, but if you parrot that, everyone will believe that you are a deep cut Queen
fan.
They'll
go, oh my God, do you listen to Queen Pod?
Yeah. Oh, no, that's immediately backfired. You've totally put a major flaw in my brand new feature point, which is very upsetting. So listen, Another One Bites the Dust is coming up. Good choice. Yeah. Yes.
Great
yes.
choice.
Another
great
choice. Huge track. So my question is this. When it comes to the end of the ending of Bohemian Rhapsody. Do you guys hear God Save the Queen kicking up in your heads from Night of the Opera? Or are you guys hearing Bites the Dust kick in at this point?
I'm hearing Bites the Dust.
Yeah. Are you, John?
Yeah.
Exciting. Where are you, Suze?
No, I'm hearing God Save the Queen. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, I think I am. I'm God Save the Queen as well. I think probably Night of the Opera is probably one of the few albums you listen to just as much as used to listen to Greatest Hits.
That's interesting. So weirdly, what I hear, I've discovered, is Funny How Love Is. Because the ending of Bohemian Rhapsody is almost the same as the ending of March of the Black Queen. And now there's obviously some sort of brain glitch that's happened in my head. Whatever, I'm hearing the end of Bohemian Rhapsody, but I think I'm finishing March of the Black Queen on the Queen 2 album. So on that bombshell, what an epic chat about Bohemian Rhapsody we've all had. We are coming back next time to talk about the wonderful Another One Bites the Dust. In the meantime, you can email us queenpod@thequeenpodcast.com, comment at the Queen Pod on Twitter, Facebook and Instagram, go along to patreon.com/queenpod to see how to support us, and whatever happens, play Queen loud. Bye bye everyone.
Bye.
Walks further down the street with the brim pool way down low. This has been The Queen Pod, a Seven Seas Films production, edited by Sam Easton and produced by Emily Wiley. Come follow us on Twitter, Instagram and Facebook, and stay in touch by emailing us at queenpod@thequeenpodcast.com. Thanks for listening and see you next time. Another one bites the dust, and another one gone, and another one gone, another one bites the dust, yeah. Hey, we're gonna get you too. Another one bites the dust.